Welcome to Disorderly Dogs, the podcast for dog guardians. If you find yourself in precarious predicaments with your dog, this podcast is for you. I'm a certified professional dog trainer, and I take my 10 years of training experience and I share easy to implement dog training advice with an emphasis on kindness and compassion. Welcome. I'm so excited to share more. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Disorderly Dogs, the podcast. I hope that you all are well, wherever you are. I know that many of you are in all kinds of different places in the world. So it's really cool that we can be together today and talk about dogs. So in today's episode, I'm going to talk about the hierarchy of dogs, which is a really, really juicy concept. And this is a bit of an excerpt from the dog communication webinar that I presented. And then I'm doing a part two coming up on March 16th. So if this episode piques your interest, please check out the Decoding Dog Communication webinar that I'm hosting. When you sign up for part two, you get access to the recording of part one. So you'll get all of the video examples and all of the nitty gritty details. But I do want to talk about hierarchy today because it's something that I think is really misunderstood. And I think that when you can start to understand the nuance and some of the things that are more important outside of dominance and submission, it can really help you understand your dog on a whole new level. When we are talking about a hierarchy, there is certainly a hierarchy that I observe in dogs. You can't deny that. There's definitely a hierarchy, but it's not what you might think. Oftentimes, especially Cesar Millan and other similar dog trainers want to make it be that you have to be the alpha and your dog has to be subservient to you. And while alpha does exist in wolf packs, it's not really what you think, right? So when we're talking about the alpha in wolf packs, we're talking about the breeding pair. So the breeding male and the breeding female, and that's what they label alpha, but they're not displaying overt aggressive behavior like power hungry brats. Like, I think so much of the world thinks that dogs are, right? Like, so many times if your dog is misbehaving, someone's like, oh, they don't view you as the alpha. And that's just so far from the truth, okay? And, you know, when we're talking about dominance and submission, they certainly exist, but it's so much broader. There's so much more going on. So when we're talking about dogs, like I'm going to be talking about today, I think that there are a few helpful things we can pull from wolf packs, but it is not the same, right? Because wolf packs are not experiencing life the way that your domesticated dog is. Your domesticated dog is not experiencing the pressures of a wolf pack, right? So most domestic dogs are not going to breed. Most domestic dogs don't have to hunt for food. Most domestic dogs don't live with genetic members of their own family. And I think that that's a really important distinction to make here, right? That when we're looking at a wolf pack, especially a pack in the wild, there is an alpha pair, right? There's the breeding pair, the male and the female, and there is a hierarchy between them. But when we look at our dogs, they're really, really far removed from the pressures that wolves are experiencing, right? The pressures of breeding, the pressures of living in a family dynamic, the pressures of hunting together, the pressures of making sure that they're getting enough to eat. And when we think about it in that lens, I think it's important to remember that our dogs are really, really far removed from the wolves. And honestly, many of you know I did a lot of work at a wolf sanctuary. The wolf sanctuary has wolf hybrids, right? So none of them are 100% gray wolf, right? They all have a varying degree of domesticated dog in their genetic makeup, and they are all paired, right, in their own habitat. So even when I was working with wolves, even our understanding of wild wolf packs didn't necessarily apply to them in that circumstance, right? Because there's usually just pairs. They're not related. They're not going to be breeding. They don't have to hunt. So I think it's really important when we're talking about hierarchy that we realize that a hierarchy of a wolf pack is definitely not going to be the same as dogs. And in this day and age, there's a lot of research in free roaming dog populations that help us understand that they form social groups, but they aren't packs. And it's not the same hierarchy that we would see in wolves even. Because from what I understand, in the free roaming population of dogs, even those that are breeding, they aren't sticking together in family units like wolves are. Males are not really helping rear young. Males aren't sticking around. Males aren't necessarily hunting for their young. And the free roaming population of dogs, they're not necessarily hunting either. There's a lot of scavenging happening more than, you know, the hunting we would see a wolf pack do. So even when we're, you know, I swear we're going to get to the domesticated dog, the one that lives with you, maybe is sitting next to you right now. I think it's really important to kind of set the stage here so that we realize that wild wolves, then wolves living in captivity, then free roaming dogs, then domesticated dogs, all of those hierarchies are different. All of them are different. So it's so much more than alpha submission and dominance, right? There's so many other things at play. As promised, I want to talk about domestic dogs. So when we're talking about the hierarchy, I like to think of the label status, right? Like what a dog's status might be, maybe within your household, maybe the status with dog friends, maybe their status when they're interacting with unknown dogs. And when we're talking about the hierarchy and the status of domesticated dogs, the dogs that you love and care for, a lot of things are at play that are so much more than the alpha submission or dominance. So age is a really big variable when we're talking about status in dogs. So a young dog is likely to have less status than an adult dog just as a baseline. This is never 100%, right? I'm speaking in general terms here. But when we're looking at status, a dog's age is going to have a big role in their status, right? As many of you know, Spicy is the youngster in this house and Waylon is the adult. So Waylon just kind of had more status just because he is the older dog. And this is something that I observe in my experience with my clients' dogs and live in, you know, being at dog parks and being out in the world. Oftentimes an older dog just carries more status than a younger dog does. The second variable that I observe a lot when it comes to status is confidence. Confidence sometimes will override the role of age, just kind of depending on the circumstance. But a dog who is more confident typically has more status just because they carry themselves in a more confident way. And they, I don't want to say demand, but they have a little bit more je ne sais quoi, right? I don't know exactly the label to use here. But in my experience, confidence usually leads to more status when it comes to how a dog interacts with not only their household dogs, dog friends, but also unknown dogs. Resilience is something else that matters for sure in the status of a dog, right? So when we're talking about resilience, that's a dog who has the ability to come back from negative experiences, conflict, confrontation with other dogs, right? Typically, resilient dogs have more status because they're not easily intimidated. They're not easily controlled by another animal. So resilience is also something that it has a role in status in dogs, in my observations. And oftentimes I see dogs who are labeled dominant or submissive. And oftentimes I'm really seeing that the dominant dogs that are labeled dominant are actually the confident dogs. And then the fearful, nervous dogs are labeled as submissive. And I don't think that dominance and submission is necessarily an accurate label. I really prefer confident or fearful because that just helps us understand the function of their status a lot more. And that helps us set those dogs up to be more successful in certain circumstances. So as many of you know, right, my American Staffordshire Terriers, Waylon and Spicy, they are very confident dogs. They both benefited from a ton of early socialization. Waylon did have some negative experiences in his early socialization, but he's very resilient. Spicy has really never had a negative experience in her social interaction. And because of their confidence, a lot of people can misinterpret their behavior as dominant when they're not trying to dominate the other dog at all, right? It's not about controlling a resource. They just have more confidence and they have more social repertoire. And therefore, you're just seeing a little bit more, I think we can label it pushy behavior. And then on the flip side of that, right, I see a lot of nervous and fearful dogs who aren't as resilient. They haven't benefited from as many positive social experiences. They don't have as much of a social repertoire. And because of that, their behavior gets labeled submissive when really there's so much more happening than they're just submitting to the other dog. And I think that when we're talking about dominance and submission, it's important to realize that these are not full-time character traits. Do I see dominant and submissive behaviors in domesticated dogs? Yes, I absolutely do. But they are not coming up as much as pop culture might want us to believe. Right? So when we're talking about dominance, the definition is power and influence over others, right? So dominance is fluid. It's not just a full-time character trait, right? So you might see an example of a dog displaying dominance when it comes to resources, right? So this is something that Waylon will try and do when Spicy is finishing her food, when he has finished hers. He will try to use some power and influence over her to convince her to share her food with him. So in that example, Waylon is using dominance to get to an outcome. Usually I'm there to redirect him so that he doesn't get the rest of her food. And that's not actually because I want him not to eat her food. It's because, as many of you know, Waylon has kidney disease and he can't eat her food. Dominance is something that I do observe. It does happen, but it's not this full-time character trait. Okay? And then when we move on to submission, submission is defined as ready to conform to the authority or will of others, meekly or obedient or passive. And submission is something that I absolutely observe in the domestic dog, but it's not necessarily what you think, right? Like oftentimes I observe submissive behaviors being used very strategically to get to an outcome, not to just submit and that's the end and the other dog is dominant and there's no other variables at play. We're talking about status, right? And we're talking about dominance and submission. It certainly exists, but it is not so much of pop culture wants us to believe, right? So when you're looking at describing your dog, their personality trait, how they interact with other dogs, what I really want to encourage you to look at and look deeper at is what is the function of the behavior that you're seeing? And sometimes the function of the behavior is they're using a little bit of dominance to get to an outcome of gaining a resource or getting a toy or getting access to a spot. Or maybe your dog is using a little bit of submissive behavior to diffuse tensions, to appease another dog, but it is so much more than that. There's so much more going on than dominance and submission, right? But they certainly do exist when we're talking about status in dogs. So like I was mentioning, this is an excerpt, right, from the Decoding Dog Communication webinar that I'm hosting. Inside of part one that you can get access to the recording of, I share loads and loads of video examples of animals interacting. I have a lot of examples of the wolves at the sanctuary, a lot of examples of domesticated dogs, but I really wanted to share this information with you all because there is just so much misinformation out there. So to recap, when we're talking about hierarchy, it does exist in domesticated dogs, but it is different than that of the free roaming population of dogs. It is different than that of wolves who are living in captivity. It is different of that of wolves living in the wild. Hierarchy certainly exists in all of those, but in domesticated dogs, it is not the breeding alpha pair and their controlling resources and their horrible bullies. That's not the truth at all, right? The breeding pair, the alpha pair in a wolf pack, is actually really quick to defer when there's food so that the young can eat. I think that it's one of those things that dominance has been so overtaken by this like ego, and you have to be the alpha and you have to dominate the dog. And I really just want you to understand that when it comes to alpha, your dog does not view you as alpha. That's so debunked at this point in time. It's not even a thing. Your dog definitely doesn't view you as an alpha. And when it comes to your domesticated dogs, there isn't really an alpha dog. That's not really how it works. But when we are talking about dominant behavior and submissive behavior, those things absolutely observe in the status of your domesticated dog. But when we look at the function of our dog's behavior that maybe we're labeling dominant or submissive, it's not necessarily what you might think that it is. All right, everybody, I really, really loved presenting this Decoding Dog Communication webinar part one. I am super looking forward to presenting part two. If you are interested in that, we will include a link to that in the show notes. Everybody have a beautiful weekend. Smooch those puppies for me, and I am already looking forward to the next episode.
There are loads of ways to support this podcast. Many of you have left reviews. Many of you have shared this podcast with your friends and family, but we've created another way for you to support this podcast by making a monetary financial contribution. You can choose from a one-time contribution or making a small monthly contribution to continue to make Disorderly Dogs possible. You can learn more at the link in the show notes.
Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you need help with your dog's behavior, you can learn more about our training services at agoodfeelingdogtraining.com. We post training inspiration and training tips almost daily over on the Instagram at agoodfeeling_NCO. If you like this podcast, we would be so grateful if you could share it with a friend or family member who could benefit from all of the information. It's been a total delight. We love this podcast so much. And thank you so much for listening to Disorderly Dogs.